Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Tuesday, March the 26th, 2024. And we are continuing our podcast series discussing the SEAT working paper list written by Laura Snyder. And quite obviously, today I'm therefore joined by Karen Alpert in Australia and Laura Snyder in Paris to continue this discussion. And it is March 26th for everybody, I think, which is
yes.
Start. So, Karen, what's happening in Australia?
It's still Australia. It's raining right now.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Rain is a good thing.
Laura, rain's
raining
fine.
In Paris too?
It's raining in Paris too. We got that in common.
Oh, wow.
It is not raining in Toronto. All right. That said, so the title of the paper today, Extraterritorial Taxation, and this is number 12 of 16, it's not about paying taxes. It's not about paying taxes. What an interesting, extraordinary title. Well, I think that this is a topic where I'd invite Karen to lead today, if you like. Karen, are you up to that?
Sure. Why not? Okay. So we've been talking about in the prior papers about a lot of human rights and other violations that, you know, violations of the Constitution that come about from the U.S. trying to tax people who no longer live in the U.S., citizenship-based taxation or nationality-based taxation. And a lot of people will listen to that and say, you just don't want to pay taxes, right? So, Laura, why are they wrong? Why is it not about the taxes?
Well, you got exactly why this article is titled that way, because exactly that's the reaction people will have. So you just don't want to pay taxes. And there's multiple reasons. Well, ultimately, this is about the problem that the system itself causes, independent of the taxes that are owed. That's the short answer to that question. And then this paper expands on that. It explains how Americans are tax residents of the places where they live. Often they live few Americans live in tax haven countries. This article talks about they pay taxes where they live. They usually don't owe much U.S. tax. They have very high preparation fees. Because of the system, they can't have a normal life. And if you look at the perspective of the United States itself, policymakers in the IRS, also, the system's not about paying tax. So this article basically expands on each of those points.
Okay, great. So let's talk about paying taxes where you live. I mean, I know I live in Australia, and I certainly pay plenty of tax to the Australian government. And I'm sure in Paris, you pay plenty of tax to the French government as well, right, Laura?
Yeah, that's the point. Very few Americans live in tax haven countries. Most Americans who live outside the U.S. live in a normal country with a normal tax system. They live in Canada, they live in Australia, they live in France, in the U.K., Sweden, Japan. All of these countries have normal tax systems. And we, you know, as residents of these countries, we're subject to taxation just like everybody else who lives in this country. We don't live tax-free in these countries. And even people who live in, say, you know, some of the Middle Eastern countries that don't have income taxes, it doesn't mean that they don't have taxes. It means that their taxes are paid in other ways, sales tax in particular.
Right.
So it's kind of, you know, people
and,
think.
And the government provides them fewer services as well.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know, your taxes go to pay for roads and schools and all these things. And if you have to pay for it directly yourself, then maybe you shouldn't be paying taxes. But why should the U.S. be able to come in just because the country where you're living happens to finance its schools, roads, hospitals, whatever, in a different way than the US does. So therefore, the taxes don't match up.
Well, that's part of the problem with trying to tax people who exist in a completely different economy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they pay taxes where they live. They don't live in tax havens. But isn't the stereotype we've got, the rich beach bum sitting in the Bahamas, sipping Mai Tais all day?
Well, that's definitely not the reality. That's the stereotype, but that's not the reality. You know, surveys of overseas Americans show that 80% are either working or looking for work. Some are retired, but the large majority are either working or looking for work. Very few are, you know, not
But
retirement
they're
age and
rich.
not working.
They're fat cats, aren't they? I mean, fat
They're
cats told
not.
us that, right? No?
They're not. They're not. They have ordinary incomes and wealth comparable to what Americans living in the United States have.
Okay. Okay, so we've
Yeah,
got a tax system where they live.
I would actually add to that.
Yep.
Salaries in the United States are quite high compared to many other countries. A lot of Americans, when they're looking at moving overseas, they're shocked by how low the salaries are compared to the United States. So that
Yes.
really runs counter to this image that, you know, everyone living overseas are fat cats.
I was talking to an IT professional who said she took a 33% cut to
Sure.
come to Australia from the US.
And you'll end up doing that if you come to Europe too. You'll more than likely take a salary cut. Big one.
Yeah, I mean, the dollars were probably similar, except that Australian dollars are worth quite a bit less than US dollars. Yes. So, okay. So, in reality, then, overseas Americans are ordinary people living in ordinary places, earning ordinary incomes, and in places that where they pay their tax.
Yeah. So the idea that, you know, Americans are moving overseas because they don't want to pay taxes is a crazy idea.
Okay, but so then maybe they it's not that they don't want to pay taxes, they just don't want to pay US taxes. Are they paying US taxes?
So 62% of the returns filed from outside the United States show no U.S. taxes owed. And this Well, we had run some numbers and come up with approximately that number ourselves, and then it was confirmed by the National Taxpayer Advocate in their most recent annual report to Congress, where they show, I think, over the past 5, 6 years, they show the percentage of returns filed from outside the United States showing no tax owed, and it basically hovers around 60, 62%.
And that's no net tax liability, not just, oh, we've been paying withholding or quarterly payments and there's no balance due on the return. It's no US taxes net, right?
Right.
But the confounding thing is the IRS doesn't really collect the right data, as far as I'm aware, because returns filed from outside the US include US military stationed overseas, U.S. consular employees stationed overseas.
Yeah, so we don't know how many
And
of
they would
those
be
returns.
paying taxes because most of them are employed overseas under agreements where they pay U.S. tax, not local tax, right?
Yes, I would assume that they're getting paid in dollars, maybe even deposited into a US account. I mean, you know.
Right. So that of the 40% that are paying taxes, probably the majority of those are people who are really domiciled in the US, but working for the US government overseas.
Certainly a certain percentage of that, yes. We just don't know how much.
But there's no way to know exactly what percentage, certainly. Yeah.
But if we could, if those people could be taken out of that pool, then yes,
And it would be a much
presumably that
higher
that it would,
percentage
yes, it'd be higher, yeah.
that's not paying taxes. Yeah. So why aren't they paying taxes to the US?
Well, you and John will be able to explain this better than me, but in a nutshell, you've got the foreign earned income exclusion, you've got foreign tax credits. I suppose those would be the biggest reasons why they're not.
Yeah, basically the US system's set up to not double tax, but then because you're looking at two completely different systems, the way they define income is different. And so it might be that $1 that's counted as income in the US might not be taxable at all where you live. And so that could have caused you to pay US tax.
Yeah,
But for
I don't.
most, the averages, they don't pay.
It John or you, Karen? At one point, I heard one of you talk about how, yeah, well, most of the time you don't owe, but when you do owe, you owe. For example, you sold your house and you have a capital
Right.
gain, and you're going to be paying on that.
Yeah, and this is why even if you qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion, it's often if you're in a high tax country, beneficial to use a foreign tax credit because you can carry over unused credits for 10 years and use them when you get a employment termination payment that's not taxable where you live, but fully taxable in the US, or you sell your house, or you start taking out retirement income. Yes. But yes, yeah. For most, though, the US tax is little. And so they'll have a US tax return that comes down to zero US tax liability, and it'll be 100 pages or more thick, and it'll cost them $1,000 or more to have prepared, right?
Yeah, that's one of the big problems with this is you're filing these very complicated tax returns. Even if you don't have much income, your tax returns are quite complicated, unnecessarily because you're outside the United States. The
Yeah,
penalty.
and much of that complication, as I understand it, and John, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but so I understand it, much of that complication is trying to look at some foreign structure, income, whatever, and say, how does that fit in onto the Internal Revenue Code, which was never written to encompass superannuation, certain types of investments in other countries, et cetera. Right?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, to be sure. The other part of it is just that, as I used to say, and I believe to be true, once you see the word foreign in the Internal Revenue Code, you're likely to also see two things within five or six words. The first is a penalty, and the second is some kind of a reporting requirement, right?
Right.
So I mean, those things are gigantic problems, and as cumbersome, bureaucratic, heavy as the sort of system is to comply with, I don't think that the real issue here, although it's interesting, is the amount of tax that Americans abroad pay. I think, the real issue is the opportunity cost, the things you lose by trying to comply with US tax laws while living outside the United States. The inability to participate in tax advantage savings plans, in your country of residence, or if not,
Or
perhaps,
purchase local mutual funds.
those kinds of things that really make it almost impossible for tax compliant Americans abroad to meet their personal responsibilities of financial and retirement planning. Now, you might find sort of a technical cross-border tax account finding the statement I made objectionable. in the sense that, well, we have this workaround or that workaround. But, the truth of the matter is that good financial planning advice for Americans abroad is not available to the overwhelming majority of people out there. And this is ultimately why people are under such tremendous pressure to renounce US citizenship. It is, for many, a matter of personal survival.
I would add to your list, businesses. I saw this in looking at the submissions people made when they responded to our last survey. They would say either I had to close my business or I'd like to have one, but I can't because of these heavy reporting requirements. Or I couldn't, partner with someone else because I was an American and they didn't want to deal with an American in their business.
Yeah, can I add something to this that I don't think has really been touched upon, but I think does fit into this, is that this creates huge psychological problems for people who eventually decide, and I hear this so often, I can't do this. I can't invest in a TFSA or something. I can't open a business, right? I am subtext. I am a member of a group of people who is not worthy of having the same opportunities as other people. And I think that part of the problem of being an American abroad is to overcome, which is for many a psychological hurdle that they can do the things they want to do. They can be as successful as residents of their country of residence. They can succeed in life and meet their goals, even with the disability of US citizenship, which I mean, it clearly is. And I don't think any reasonable argument can be made to the contrary.
That terminology is, I think, interesting because it's exactly the terminology that the Supreme Court uses when they say why laws that discriminate on the basis of nationality are not acceptable, because they are automatically assumed to treat people who are being singled out as being less worthy, less deserving. That's the exact terminology that the Supreme Court uses to explain why those laws are a problem. And
What's
that's exactly
interesting,
what's happening here.
yeah, what's interesting here is that I think that one can make the case that it's not the content of the laws.
Well, it's the
It's the result,
well,
right? It's
yeah,
the
but it
impact
is
of the
the
law.
intention. It is the intention of the law, and it certainly is the current intention and why there's people object to changing the laws. Because there is an assumption that we're less worthy. We're fat cats.
Yeah, true. But the bigger, the larger problem is that this becomes internalized by
Well,
individuals,
yeah.
right?
But
Hidden.
that's part of the same phenomena. What you see when people are discriminated against on the basis of race or nationality is they internalize it. And yes, they accept this idea that they're less deserving and less worthy.
That's right. And I actually have come to see over the years this psychological shift in how Americans abroad see themselves as a, very much a reality and very much a gigantic part of this problem. And, it's funny, a couple nights ago, I had a last minute call with somebody who I presume renounced US citizenship yesterday. Kind of going over this kind of stuff, and it hit me during the discussion. There's I'm always striving in these kind of these individual conversations with people to find a way to connect with them in the discussion, to help them, figure out what it is they want to do. But what hit me was that American citizenship is, it is totally the problem, right? Because it was sort of like, well, he was on the fence, should he renounce or not? And, if he kept his U.S. citizenship. He was worried about the access to the United States. He worried about not having the ability to enter the United States with a U.S. passport, from time to time, versus, we talked a lot about this, the 24/7 problem if he keeps U.S. citizenship, of having to think about his U.S.-ness, if you will, in relation to every other single aspect of his life. And, so ultimately, the renunciation question came down to, I think, well, U.S. citizenship is a problem either way. How do you want to deal with this? Do you want to retain U.S. citizenship and have to worry and have this problem and have to confront this problem every day for the rest of your life? Or do you want to get rid of your U.S. citizenship and, if this becomes a problem, confront it only here and there, right? This is the thing. And I have rarely seen, had a discussion with a person that just, where the sort of psychological burden of American citizenship was so front and center.
The tax, the extraterritorial tax system really limits your ability to have a normal life, doesn't it?
Oh, and by the way, oh, absolutely, it does. It does. I wouldn't even call it, I wouldn't call it an extraterritorial tax system. I would call it an extraterritorial system of regulation and persecution that is in the language of taxation. Because it's not always the taxation at all. All right.
No, it's the disclosures and the information returns
Well,
and
the
the
horrible threats, the horrible threats of penalties, right?
yeah.
Which is, I mean, absolutely unconscionable. I mean, we ought to do a podcast sometime just focusing on, penalty stories, right? The outrageousness of this kind of stuff. But, I think all citizenships have value, and I think that American citizenship, obviously does have value. But it's the only citizenship in the world that I think is worth renouncing. And this is obviously evidenced by the fact that large numbers of people are renouncing. More would renounce if they could. I think the people who don't do renounce are likely the people who try the tax compliance sort of thing. It's a terrible, terrible thing. I mean, the United States has basically devalued its citizenship from being an opportunity and a matter of pride to being the single biggest problem in their lives.
Doing a little research the other day on the numbers of Americans renouncing, and I wasn't looking for it, but it came up in my in the search results, an article about the number of Russian renouncing citizenship, and I was it was very interesting to me to see that I guess at the moment about 4,000 and some Russians are renouncing each year. I think that was what I remember seeing, and I thought, wow, I mean, that's got to be the only country that even comes close to what the American numbers are. I'm not
Well, and
aware.
was this because of the sanctions, the problem of sanctions?
I'm assuming it's just because of the war, and it's I'm assuming it's Russians who don't live already don't live in Russia. I don't know. I'd have to look at it some more. I just it was just the number that stuck in my head. Because I was looking for information on Americans renouncing, but in my I had thought that no other country came close to the number of people renouncing. And then I saw, okay, I wasn't quite right about that because there are a lot of Russians also renouncing. Maybe it is because of the sanctions, because that could be why. But I just found it quite interesting that that's the country that we're in competition with on.
Well,
Russia, Eritrea, the US is
and Eritrea. I mean, there's no question about that. But I see this though. We talk about this from the perspective of Americans abroad. But I think that this is, generally what I would call the weaponization of the tax system. I think this is an American problem generally, right? Is that so much of the tax system, we talked about this last time, really has nothing to do with taxation. It has to do with incentives, punishment, And because of the difficulty in understanding it, the weaponization. But I mean, you look at what's happening with, President Trump, for example, right? I mean, part of what's going on, at least in the New York stuff, right, is tax issues, isn't it, right? And you look at the Hunter Biden thing again, it's a tax issue, et cetera. At least these things are trumped up as tax issues.
Right. I mean, that's how they got Al Capone, isn't it? With
Yeah,
tax
well,
issues.
yeah, that's how they got Al. Yeah, I presumably so, right? But again, this is the result of a comprehensive penalty-laden regulatory regime where compliance, there's only varying degrees of compliance because compliance is basically impossible, right?
Right.
And this is especially true for Americans abroad, that compliance is basically impossible.
We talked about in other podcasts about the purpose of taxation, and we talked about, at least in my opinion, one of the most important purposes of taxation is to control people's behavior, either encourage things you want people to do and discourage things you don't want them to do. And to me, it's crystal clear in the statements that policymakers have made about how overseas Americans are taxed, about the laws they've adopted. It's crystal clear in their statements and in the substance of the law that the purpose of this is not to extract tax revenue. It is to discourage people from living outside the country, from having a financial life outside the country, and to punish them when they try to do so, independent of tax revenue.
Oh, Laura, I think there's absolutely no question about it. I mean, and this is evidenced also. I don't think, quite worked this way into the podcast today in this way, but the simple fact of the matter is that the United States imposes a separate tax and regulatory regime on Americans abroad, right?
Right,
But
because of the way they treat anything that's foreign,
yeah, that's
it's
exactly
local
right.
to the individual. Yeah,
I mean, there's no
absolutely.
question about it.
And that's what's behind all of these things that Laura's listed in the paper about limited opportunities, difficulty savings, etc. It's because the US taxation of your savings and investment is different when that savings and investment happens outside the US.
Yeah, and I think that in one of the earlier podcasts, one of the I think maybe this is one of the papers, Laura listed something like 23 ways or 25 ways, specific examples of how Americans abroad are punished for being, having foreign stuff or being abroad. Maybe,
That
what were
was a
some of those
discussion
things?
on second-class citizenship, all the ways that we, yeah, there it compares how U.S. residents are taxed as compared to non-resident non-citizens and then citizens who are not residents of the U.S.
So, I
And
mean, what
it
would be
was
three or four examples, just to give it context?
we overseas Americans can't benefit from the tax treaties like residents of the United States can, and people who are non-citizen, non-residents. We can't invest normally or plan for retirement normally. Our bank accounts are considered criminal. Bank accounts of other people are not considered criminal. Is that enough examples, or you want more?
No, that's enough examples, but that reminds me a little bit about the that recent paper we had published in Tax Notes, right? This whole we talk about how the transition tax
Yep.
most negatively Americans abroad affected Americans abroad, right?
Right.
And then the response from these tax academics claiming, oh, I mean, all you have to, you should have just invested, run your business through a U.S. S corp, right? You know, in other
Which is totally nonsensical if you're paying taxes as a resident of
words,
another
of
country.
course it's nonsensical, right? But the basic assumption is if it's American, it's good. If it's not American, well, you're getting what you deserve. Right. I mean, you know, that's the real point. I mean that was, you know, the notion that somehow Americans abroad should have been avoided the transition tax by running their businesses through a U.S. S corp is one of the most idiotic and offensive things I've ever seen from the tax academic community.
Well, I think when they made that statement, they weren't even thinking that Americans about Americans abroad, not
Exactly.
realizing that they would, Americans abroad who are running a small business where they live have controlled foreign corporations.
Yeah.
Whereas American residents who are running a business where they live have just normal, plain vanilla corporations.
These are these people that weren't thinking about overseas Americans. You can't give them a pass because these are the exact same people who will, when you do talk about overseas Americans being taxed and you put it on the table in so many words, they will defend it and they will conveniently ignore problems like having a business.
Oh yeah,
Right.
no, they get no pass and they get no presumption of credibility. Okay. They are without a doubt, part of the problem. And to describe their response to the situation of Americans abroad as anything other than, sheer ignorance, stupidity, and lack of awareness would be a mistake, because that's exactly what it is.
I guess
Nice.
we've talked
Okay,
about
so I
quite
think we've gone through all the penalties. We've talked about them. We've talked about how difficult it is. So the last section of the paper, Laura, is talking about the perspective of the United States.
Yeah. So, yeah,
So
the first, go ahead.
why does the United States impose its tax rules on people who live out outside of the US if it isn't to collect taxes?
Well, so it's definitely not to collect taxes, and you can see that in the amount of tax revenue that is collected as compared to all tax revenue collected from all sources and from all taxpayers, and also as compared to the federal budget. So that the paper has those that data in it. When you look at the statements that policymakers have made in 1864, when the United States first started taxing the worldwide income of its citizens living outside the United States, in 1890, 94, 1890 something, when they
1894.
1894, when they reinstated, tried to reinstate the income tax, you see that the members of Congress who were talking about this, they were not talking about needing revenue from people who lived outside the country. They were talking about how they didn't think people should be living outside the country. And if they are, gosh dang it, they should be paying, probably more taxes than people who do live in the country. And this is a form of punishment because
Sounds
they
like
shouldn't be out
feudalism to me.
there.
Doesn't it? You're a
Well,
serf. You're not allowed to leave
yes.
the domain
Yeah.
of
Well,
your king.
I think that's a legitimate way of looking at it, but yeah, you should not be taking your services. You should not be taking your labor and your contributions to the community. You should not be taking those outside the country. You have no right to do that. And well, yes, it's a concept of a person as a subject rather than a citizen.
Right.
And this attitude is still there, hasn't gone away.
Yeah, well, witness FATCA, right?
And the other way that you see this is in the approach of the IRS. The IRS gives almost no services to overseas Americans when in the past 5, 6 years, it has had occasions, two big occasions, to try and get resources in order to provide better services to overseas Americans. They have declined those opportunities twice in the past 5, 6 years. And so that, you know, with the Taxpayer First Act and with the most recent budget that they, you know, that Congress voted, that's been voted on and off, if you look at how the IRS has talked about how they want to spend that money, none of it is for overseas Americans, improving services for overseas Americans. And yet at the same time, when the taxpayer advocacy panel asks them repeatedly, can you improve this service, even provide this service? Their answer is always, we don't have the money, we don't have the resources. But at the same time, when they could be asking for those resources and money, they don't ask for it. And so this shows you that the IRS doesn't care. And I think actually there's a logic to it, because why would they be looking for resources to provide better services to overseas taxpayers when the revenue they get from them is so low? I mean, you want to get more returns that show no tax owed? Really? It's not logical. It's unconscionable, the whole system, but there is a logic to that approach. The other thing you see with the IRS is they've stated in so many words that their approach towards overseas Americans in terms of revenue is collecting penalties. That they're very focused on collecting penalties more so than they are on the revenue itself. You see that in the exchanges that they've had with TIGTA.
All right. So, what can we conclude? That the U.S. tax system is not trying to collect taxes or money from Americans overseas.
No,
they're trying to control Americans overseas.
It's a vehicle for controlling and punishing.
Yeah.
And it's not just Americans overseas. People who live in the United States, to the extent that they know about these issues, will second guess any thought of leaving the country.
Right.
So this is a question about individual self-determination, about being able to live the life you want to live, and being, you know, you live in the United States and you think, gosh, I'd like to live in another place for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to be a legitimate reason. People can, you know, should be able to live where they want. And it shouldn't be up to someone else to judge whatever their reason is for it. But whatever your reason is, good or bad, this is going to factor into your decision making. And either it's going to cause you to not leave the country, stay there, even though you would have liked to have left. Or if you do leave, it's going to cause you to live a different life than you would have liked to have lived. You're not going to start your own business. You're not going to invest the way you would wanted to. You're not going to, you know, be a part of your family and own assets with your family the way you'd like to. There's also,
or if you really want to do all those things, you'll give up your U.S. citizenship so that you can't go back to visit your U.S. family.
Yes, you give up your U.S. citizenship. Who, you know, you don't really want to do that. And that in itself violates, you know, any idea of self-determination, that you're forced to give up something as essential as a citizenship.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Laura. That was a really illuminating discussion on.
Thanks to you and John, too.
John, any final words?
Well, I know Laura doesn't want to hear this, but all roads lead to renunciation if you want the kind of life you want, you know, or if you want to achieve your goals.
What do you want me to say?
Laura, any other final words before we close this off?
No, just glad we were able to have this discussion, and thanks again.
Okay, well, thank you both.